Today on the show, did Harris just break her campaign with her awful price gouging plan?
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo. This is Logan Seculo. Will Haynes joining me in studio as well. We got a packed show. CeCe Hiles joining us. Harry Hutchinson's joining us. Jeff Balaban from ACLJ Jerusalem. It's going to be slammed. We're also going to take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Hope you're having a good Monday so far. We are opening up the show to talk about, I'm sure you maybe saw if you're involved in sort of the political internet, a lot of the conversations that were occurring about Harris's plan to stop price gouging of groceries, and mainly the fact that the pushback has been pretty aggressive. And of course, this comes from clips. Here's like a little bit of a super cut of some of the things she's been saying on the campaign trail.
Everyday prices are too high. It feels so hard to just be able to get ahead. The bills add up. Food, rent, gas, back to school clothes, prescription medication, the cost of food. A loaf of bread costs 50% more. Ground beef is up almost 50%. There's a serious housing shortage. The price of housing has gone up. It's too difficult to build, and it's driving prices up. It is out of reach. The size of down payments have gone up as well. Costs are still too high. There's not much left at the end of the month, and prices are still too high.
So that's just a super cut of one speech where she was talking about this. And of course, one of the clips that isn't in there, she said, of course, this is a lot of it happened, you know, since the pandemic, which means what? Of course, that means during your administration, when you were, I don't know, the number two person in the country, the vice president of the United States. But for some reason, we're told, oh, trust her to fix these problems when she's had over 3.5 years to do something about it. But of course, it's gotten worse and worse. This is essentially an incumbent president in many ways, and we have to start treating it that way. And of course, even the news, even CNN, even some of the big, more liberal-leaning platforms have started pushback on this.
That's right. CNN's headline is Harris's plan to stop price gouging could create more problems than it solves. Washington Post had an opinion article that basically said that now the problems of now cause for serious measures, and she only offers gimmicks. And unfortunately for the American people, we're the ones that would suffer under these types of plans that she's putting forward. This was her very first big policy rollout, and it was to take from the playbook of socialist and communist countries, the Soviet Union, Venezuela, and countries of that nature of, hey, pricing's out of control because of what we've done as an administration. So what we're going to do is we're going to fix the prices. We're going to make sure that the companies, the chains of grocery stores, they're not charging you too much. We're going to set prices. And we have some commentary from even from CNN, once again, that talks about it. We can play in the next segment, and we'll be joined by Professor Hutchison, who is, and the expertise of his is economics and the law of economics.
Yeah, we're just going to say,
and we're going to get into that.
And I'll let him roll for 8 minutes and see what happens there. But I did want to encourage you to take a minute. One, if you're brand new to this broadcast, a lot of you are joining us right now on YouTube, on Rumble, on Facebook, on X. Follow, like, subscribe, whatever it is on your platform of choice. Obviously, if you're listening on radio, we thank you as well. But if you are new, we're going to ask you to subscribe. Over 420,000 people subscribe to our YouTube channel. 421,000 people subscribe to our YouTube channel. That's an impressive, amazing number. And that's not just us bragging. That's showing you the alternative media and press can get out there in new and unique ways. So I encourage you to do that. But also, phone lines are open. We want to hear from you. Though we're going to have some leading experts in, like you said, Professor Hutchinson. We're going to have on CeCe Hiles, one of our senior attorneys. We're going to have the head of ACLJ Jerusalem on later on to talk about Israel. But we want to hear from you as well. Your voice is just as important, if not more important, to this conversation. 1-800-684-3110. But we are in the middle of our life and liberty drive. And look, there's been a lot going on. Also, you've seen with the DNC pushing their pro-abortion agenda, and we are pushing back against that. We urgently need your support. You have seen what they're doing. Planned Parenthood is sending out trucks, and it's going to be crazy. We're going to discuss that more as we are rolling out today. The plan is today that we will be filing our lawsuit in Massachusetts on that big campaign. You want to be a part of it right now. Go to ACLJ.org. Your donations are doubled still through the month through our match. You want to be a part of this, the big counter campaign, and everything we're doing right now, do it right now. ACLJ.org or scan the QR code on your screen. We'll be back in just a moment. your calls at 1-800-684-3110. Professor Hutchison just sat down in studio, but I wanted to take a minute here because we didn't really have a lot of time at the end of that last segment to tell you about the Life and Liberty Drive and what we're doing today. Because if you are involved in the pro-life cause, like I know a lot of you are, and you may have seen some information over the weekend that was disheartening, but our ACLJ team has been working over the weekend to file today, and our plan is to file today, a lawsuit in our big Massachusetts campaign. You've heard about this. When I was walking around Boston, all of a sudden I saw all of these billboards from the state, from the government, saying avoid anti-abortion centers. And then you go, and it's essentially a smear campaign against pro-life pregnancy resource centers that provide food, provide clothes, provide ultrasounds, a lot of different care that these pro-life pregnancy centers do offer. And of course, they are trying to, they don't want you to get an abortion. That's part of their thing. You know, they are pregnancy resource centers. But the state has decided to make them the enemy. And we are taking it to the state in two-pronged ways. We are going, number one, with a lawsuit. We are going to court. And that could happen as soon as today. That will likely happen today. And then also, we're going to do a massive counter campaign. And how massive that is based on your response. So I encourage you right now, as we are filing a lawsuit today and we are launching this huge counter campaign, your ACLJ is battling each and every one of these cases that requires all the resources we can. It's a political year. It's also, we're talking about inflation. We're talking about things. I know it's tough, but we need the resources to continue and expand these legal battles as the pro-abortion campaigns are coming for your state if we don't win this in Massachusetts. They have already said Massachusetts is the first place, and then they're going to be rolling this out around the country. So right now, we are getting really involved on a local level that has national consequences. So I encourage you, if you're watching right now, you can scan that QR code or go to aclj.org or aclj.org/massdeception. Like Massachusetts, mass deception, to find out more about this campaign specifically. I encourage you to do that. Pray about it, think about it, and give if you can. We are having some big days right now, but we need to continue on because we have the best of the best. And that's why we brought in Harry Hutchison to talk about this, Will, because to pivot off of our Life and Liberty Drive, that's my fundraising pitch for a second. I do want to talk about what is going on in the Harris campaign as they are saying, hey, trust us. We're going to get your cost of fuel down. We're going to get the cost of groceries down. We're going to stop price gouging. We're going to do all of these things.
That's right. And Professor Hutchison, for months they told us, you know, Bidenomics worked. Everything is great. The economy is the best in the world. But then at the same time, Kamala Harris had to give a economic policy speech as the very first thing she rolled out policy-wise for her campaign. So those two things don't square right away of if everything's great, why do you need to unveil new policy? But what was your take? And you're a professor of law and economics. Your expertise, I know we bring you on about many topics regarding the law, but when the economy starts to be the topic of conversation, we know we got to go to Professor Hutchison. What was your take when you heard the speech and you're sitting there and like, really? Your top line issue is going to be price fixing and stopping, quote, price gouging or gauging, as she said. What was your takeaway when you thought this is what her big rollout is?
Well, first, I thought about Javier Milei. Who is Javier Milei? The president of Argentina. And he has said if printing money would end poverty, printing diplomas would end stupidity. Milei's comments explains why prices are simply too high in the United States and why Kamala Harris's economic policies are indeed unworkable and will backfire. So the Biden administration, if you really look at their claims, they falsely claim that the inflation rate, for instance, was 9% when Biden took office. In reality, the inflation rate was 1.4%, and the inflation rate peaked in June of 2022 at 9.2%. Kamala Harris, for instance, notes that the cost of a loaf of bread is now up 50%, that ground beef is up 50%, overall food prices are up 20%. So she doesn't seem to understand reality, and she doesn't understand who causes inflation. It's government policy and the Federal Reserve's willingness to print money. So if we take government out of the equation, guess what? Prices are likely to remain flat. That's number one. And then number two, if we return to Trump economic policies, including energy independence, guess what? Prices are likely to fall. So one of the things that we should keep in mind is that Kamala Harris doesn't understand that her policies would actually worsen things. As a commentator recently pointed out, if you look at Venezuela, if you look at Cuba, if you look at the Soviet Union, what has happened? We've had shortages, and in Venezuela, people have been reduced to eating zoo animals. So I think her policies are a huge mistake, and most left-wing commentators basically understand that. She does not.
Yeah, it doesn't seem that way.
Well, I was going to ask you, because she has been avoiding the press, as we know, but she gave this big speech and a reporter was able to ask a question as she was boarding her bus, her campaign bus. And it's a little bit longer, but I think to do it justice and to get your response, Professor Hutchison, some of the other aspects, there were some child tax credits that she had thrown in there, a cap or a rebate if you have a down payment on your first home. So let's go ahead and play bite three, and then I want to get Professor Hutchison's take on it.
You were ahead of your economic policies last week.
Yeah.
Can you explain how you're going to pay for those? And can you give us a sense of what other policies you want to unveil going forward?
Sure. Well, I mean, you just look at it in terms of what we are talking about, for example, around children and the child tax credit and extending the EITC. It's at $6,000 for the first year of a child's life. The return on that investment in terms of what that will do and what it will pay for will be tremendous. We've seen it when we did it the first year of our administration. We reduced child poverty by over 50%. So that's a lot of the work. And then what we're doing in terms of the tax credits, we know that there's a great return on that investment. And when we increase home ownership in America, what that means in terms of increasing the tax base, not to mention property tax base, what that does to fund schools, again, return on investment. I think it's a mistake for any person who talks about public policy to not critically evaluate how you measure the return on investment. When you are strengthening neighborhoods, strengthening communities, and in particular the economy of those communities, and investing in a broad-based economy, everybody benefits, and it pays for itself.
When she's talking about these tax credits or these programs, one, to get passed in Congress, it has to be told how it's going to be funded, how it's going to cost other parts of the economy when you start to put these in place. She has no answer for that. Instead says, look to the future. It's going to be great. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think she's living in dreamland, and basically she spent too much time in Hollywood. So, for instance, if you focus simply on child credits, if we look at child credits, they cost the Treasury money or funds. And so what she is basically attempting to do is to drive up inflationary spending. So we should expect inflation to rise in the short run. We should then expect the Federal Reserve to do what? To raise interest rates, basically crushing home ownership. Simultaneously, she's talking about giving a $25,000 credit to new home buyers. Again, that's inflationary. So she doesn't understand that her policy initiatives will actually drive up the inflationary rate in the United States. And guess what? Under the Biden-Harris administration, not only have they driven up inflation, approaching almost 10%, they have driven down employment of native-born Americans. And so the Biden-Harris regime has basically opened the borders to illegal and legal immigrants, and the employment rate for native-born Americans has actually fallen during the Biden-Harris administration. So at the end of the day, one of the things that we should note about the Kamala Harris economic plan is everything she proposes will backfire.
Yeah, and
it's a mistake.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you breaking that down. We have a lot of comments. People are just curious because a lot of people don't even understand the very basics. And look, I'm not going to say I know everything about it, of just how inflation works, why the prices go up, why they go down, who's in control of that. So I really did hopefully give people a good baseline. If you want to go back, I encourage you to send that to your friends. Give them an understanding of why you're deciding to even vote the way you're going to vote, or who you're going to vote for. You're going to vote for Harris. Maybe you see that commentary. You go, okay, that's what I'm looking for. I will have to say, as I watch the comments, nothing really latched on to people as much as you saying that we may have to eat zoo animals. That has been a conversation starter of what animal would you go to. One person went after the koalas, and that turned a lot of people were very upset
choice.
About that.
It's a weird choice.
Yeah, some people said silverback gorilla, which I was got offended, but there's a lot of people having that discussion right now. So you know what? Great, deep, analytical, financial conversations, and you never know what the internet's going to do with it. So thank you, Harry, for joining us. Next up, CeCe Hyle's going to be here. We're going to talk about our big push for life and our new lawsuit as well. Again, as Jeff Balaban joining us from Israel, from the ACLJ Jerusalem, coming up later in the broadcast. But again, I want to encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ, which also supports this broadcast. If you like this show, if you're one of the thousands and thousands that watches each and every day, throw a little bit of money behind it to make sure we stay on the air. We are not advertiser supported. We are supported by you, the individual. Go to ACLJ.org right now. To Seculo, we encourage you right now, if you're brand new to the broadcast or you haven't yet, if you're watching on YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, X, however you're watching this, or if you're listening, but if you're watching one of those platforms and you're brand new and you're like, I love what you guys are talking about, hit that subscribe button. We appreciate it. Maybe you haven't yet, because we know about 50% of the people that watch every day haven't subscribed. So you know what? You can make a big impact right now just with that alone. We encourage your financial donation, but of course, we really appreciate it, even if you just get involved. Over 421,000 of you alone on YouTube, 200,000 plus on Rumble. This is building a mass audience because this is the information people want out there. And I want to tell you about some of our legal work right now. You heard about it earlier in the broadcast. I talked about our campaign that we are planning to roll out in Massachusetts. Well, that's all really launching today. And it's today is the plan to take this to court. CeCe Hyle's joining us, senior counsel here at the ACLJ. CeCe, why don't you lead us through this?
Sure. So what we're talking about is an actual campaign that Massachusetts, the government itself, launched against pregnancy resource centers. And those used to be called crisis pregnancy centers. Those are the centers that support women when they're making a determination about keeping their child. And they actually give them options, not just abortion. That's not the only option. There are options that they can provide, and they can provide assistance even after the women have their babies. So Massachusetts launched this incredibly huge campaign that targets the crisis pregnancy centers and actually accuses them of being a public health threat and carrying out false and misleading advertisement. And not only that, but they're actively urging citizens to report PRCs to state law enforcement. So we, of course, jumped in and took action, and we are representing one of the PRCs, Your Options Medical Centers. And we are filing today in the District Court of Massachusetts. And, you know, we are stating that Massachusetts, of course, they can express their views. A government can express their views. But in the very recent case, the NRA case before the Supreme Court, they were clear in saying what a government cannot do, however, is use the power of the state to punish or suppress disfavored expression. And that's exactly what they're doing here in this case. They're actively going after pro-life resource centers because pregnancy resource centers because of their pro-life message, because of their religious beliefs, and they cannot do that. That violates the First Amendment, and it's impermissible viewpoint discrimination.
And I wanted to clarify for people to know, these pregnancy resource centers are not just saying, okay, don't have an abortion, that's all we're doing here. Many of them, most of them, I'd say, are providing incredible amount of resources, whether that is post-birth care, whether that is, you know, some of them offer diapers and food and clothing for people who have economic hardships, who are nervous about having a baby. But we are seeing this sort of move towards this. And even the words, I talked to some of my friends in Massachusetts. They're like, they don't even like their billboards that say anti-abortion centers, because it's opening up a conversation with even like a kid that they're not really wanting to have or ready to have. And the state is doing it and doing it in a way that feels nefarious and it feels dark and heavy. At the same time, now at the DNC, you have Planned Parenthood making the announcement that they're going to be having a bus out front that's providing free medical abortions and other services that will be offered there, and that they have a wait list, and it's very celebratory. If you look at the images on the screen, beep, beep, Planned Parenthood's coming to town. I mean, that's not That's not their, that's their words, not mine. So Chicago, we're heading your way to provide free vasectomies and abortions. Here we come, Chicago. Our mobile health clinic, and I'm not going to tell you the information. I don't want to spread it, but it's all out there. Reserve your spot right now. It's a celebration of the destruction of life. There's not a heart there. There's not a person going, oh, I believe I'm a pro-choice person because I believe, you know, not only do women should have control of their bodies, but I believe that there should be, you know, that they feel, you know, there's heart there. That is not where the Democrats have headed. That is not where the state of Massachusetts decided to go. The state of Massachusetts says, look out for words like hope in their name. I mean, that's on their website. Right. Look out for words like hope, because it could be a hope pregnancy center, which means, you know what that means? They're not going to give you an abortion. It's changed so dramatically.
Yeah.
In just a handful of years.
Right.
You should not be able to say the word abortion. Even pro-choice advocates avoided using it because they knew it makes everyone, no one is celebrating abortion, at least up until the last handful of years. And I wanted to play a clip actually from Robert F. Kennedy Jr., from RFK, who obviously is the third party candidate right now, who you may not agree with him on what he's about to say here, but this is someone who at least has a bit of compassion, a bit of heart, and is willing to say, as Will said, the quiet part out loud of what's really going on in these abortion, the abortion clinic industry, if you will. Let's take a listen to him.
85% of the abortions that take place in this country are among black women. And the institutions themselves, the Planned Parenthood facilities, are most often sited in black neighborhoods. And for a lot of these young black mothers, the difficult choice to have an abortion is driven by economic indicators, by economic strictures. Today, childcare costs on average about 37% of a mother's income. And we should not be in a situation in this country where any mother is aborting a child because they believe they can't afford that baby. And we ought to be putting the same amount of resources into making sure nobody has to make that choice as we're putting into Planned Parenthood.
Hey, I mean, a very interesting, nuanced point of view from RFK saying, hey, if we're going to put this money into Planned Parenthood, we need to be putting money into life-saving efforts as well, baby-saving efforts as well. Maybe if you had the state of Massachusetts doing that, we wouldn't have to be taking this to court.
Right. Can you imagine, though, the uproar that we would be seeing if Massachusetts was saying we're going to support these PRCs, would actually do exactly what he just said. They are providing that support. And yes, people are making decisions to abort their babies because of convenience reasons, which include economic reasons.
Right.
And so that shouldn't be. He's exactly right. You should not be saying, I am going to actually kill my baby because I can't afford to have it. That should not be happening. And the PRCs step in and fill that void.
Well, and you also think of how many billions of dollars the United States government has given to Planned Parenthood over the past decades. It's billions of dollars that they have funded this organization, and Planned Parenthood uses a fun accounting and money gimmicks and fungibility of money to say it's not directly providing for abortion services, it's paying for everything else, but in reality, they're freeing up their funds to be able to provide abortions. And when you see something like what RFK is saying, if you're an America First person, you should be wanting to care for Americans in the inner city or in different places that they feel like that's their only option. And that's why PRCs are such a benefit and great ministry that they provide to mothers who find themselves in a situation where they may be terrified of what the future looks like. Instead, the government goes after them. And today's Democrat Party that is celebrating abortion at their convention takes it so lightly and celebratory.
Yeah, that's right. That's why we're going to court today. And look, some of you lose us here at the half hour. If you don't, great. Join us. I got a whole other half hour coming up. Great content. Great people are joining us. But if you do lose us here, if you're listening on terrestrial radio or however it is, or maybe you just got to go, I encourage you right now. You heard from CeCe. That is the legal work that we're doing. The legal work's been going, but we are filing today. That's happening right now. People are working around the clock to get this done. Then we're taking this massive counter campaign to Massachusetts. If Massachusetts goes well, beyond. So, you know, put your money where your mouth is. If this is something that's really important to you, as it is to us, go to ACLJ.org right now. All donations are doubled here during this Life and Liberty Drive for the month of August. The campaigns are coming for your state. If you think this is disgusting, it's coming for your state. But your ACLJ, we're battling each and every one of these issues in court and in the media. Be a part of it right now. ACLJ.org. We'll be right back.
Keeping you informed and engaged. Now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome back to Seculo. If you're just joining us right now, we got a big topic to discuss, which is obviously the inflation campaign promises, the price gouging campaign promises coming from the Harris administration, if you will, which is what I'm essentially calling the presidential administration right now. They should be taking credit for what's actually happening. Instead of giving some sort of future cast of when I'm president, I'll be able to, day one, stop your groceries from being expensive. Stop your fast food from being expensive. But no, she's not taking responsibility as the vice president, coming up with new ways to spin it and act like you're a brand new person on the campaign trail. And a lot of calls have come in about this at 1-800-684-3110. We'll be taking your calls in this segment and in the last segment. Kent is calling in Texas on line one. He's watching on ACLJ.org. You're up.
Hi, yes. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, with all the controversy about how Kamala became the candidate, I'm thinking that surely the people who founded our system of government realized that it was possible for a candidate to die or become incapacitated between the nomination and the election. And there must be some standard procedure or rules for what they do in that case. And I'm wondering what those rules are, and did the Democratic Party follow them, or did they just decide to go their own way?
Sure, Kent, we can discuss that. Obviously, the decision to pick Harris was due to some of those sticky situations that could have come out of moving someone else into that slot. So we knew that it really had to be Harris, just due to the campaign, the finances, and all of that. But, Will, it's not necessarily standard operating procedure.
That's right. So, I mean, there are many third parties that don't have any sort of votes cast to have their nominee. The parties nominate their own candidate based off their own rules. The two largest, the Republicans and Democrats, have primaries and caucuses, but even the rules between how they pick their candidate and how the delegates are allocated are different for the two parties. But I will say one thing that the founding fathers did warn of was a great two-party system. John Adams said a division of the republic into two great parties is to be dreaded as the great political evil. So while they don't limit how the parties nominate, they were concerned that America would end up as two basically monolithic parties that can't, you're only picking one or the other, and they're the ones that rule the day.
And it's hard to believe of a time when it won't be that way. I mean, you have independent candidates pop up, but they rarely poll over 10%. And you have that with Kennedy right now. They could disrupt, but they can't win. I mean, as much as I would love to see an independent win, not necessarily this time around, but in general, just to shake things up, I just simply don't see it happening. The monsters are too big in the Republican and the Democrat Party. Let's go ahead and take one more call, at least in this segment. Stay on hold, though, if you're on hold. Let's go to Justin, who's calling in California, watching on YouTube. You can give us a call at 1-800-684-3110. Justin, you're up.
Hey, this is my call. I'm worried that Trump's going to cost himself the election here if he continues on with the personal attack on Kamala. Honestly, I think all he has to do is stick to policy, which he has her every single one, and highlight the left position of government. What do you think about that?
Justin, look, we've been saying that for since President Trump decided to run again and even last time, and I honestly, I'm a little too blue in the face of it. We've said it too many times. It's just simply not going to happen. As much as I agree with you that she has a policy record that is extreme, that should be easy to dismantle, that is not the way President Trump rolls. And the more people that tell him not to roll that way, he's going to go the opposite. I don't want to be that person who goes on here and goes, do I agree with you? Yeah, I do agree. I don't necessarily agree with you that he's going to cost himself the election. But I do agree there's enough in policy to where he should be able to win just on that. But they decide, there's a lot of people who are very smart who decided, they like the name calling. They like the belittling. They like the, some of the pushing that I'm really not a fan of in either side. I just think it's disgusting sometimes. It is what it is. Sadly, it's the world we live in. And you know what? It's been the world we've lived in forever. Go look up a lot of presidents that have had this. There were times where this was happening when it was all done in the press that you didn't get delivered for weeks on end. And they were going after each other, calling each other names. Founding fathers were doing it too. I don't love it, but sadly, it's the world we live in. But is it the world that I want my kids listening to the news on? No, it isn't. But that's where we're at. Give us a call at 1-800-684-3110. Jeff Balaban from ACLJ Jerusalem joining us next. To Secular. We're going to see wall-to-wall coverage of the Democrat National Convention happening this week, as well as the return to students to the university level. So we know there's a lot going on, and maybe that big issue. This is coming from the New York Times, by the way. The headline is, Democrat Unity Convention has one giant exception, the Gaza War. We have Jeff Balaban joining us, head of ACLJ Jerusalem. Obviously, this is what's in the news right now as we head into a Democratic convention. Historically, the Democrats, if you want to go back way historically, been very supportive of Israel publicly, has never been really, it's been an issue, but a fringe issue, if you will, but now it's front and center. They're planning for the protests. We're planning, like, there's a lot of curiosity on whether students return to protesting. I want to get your point of view when you see these kind of headlines start breaking.
Well, first of all, people need to recognize that the New York Times has been, very anti-Israel for decades, and indeed many say is openly anti-Semitic, going back to its refusal to cover the Holocaust, honestly. So the New York Times, as a paper of record, tends to spin things in a way that's very hostile, not just to Jews, but to the truth, to Israel, and to America. This article, for example, that you raised, Logan, it is fascinating to point out that there seems to be unity, that's what they want to call it, across issues except for this issue. They're pretending it's a Muslim versus Jewish issue when it's not. It is a death to America versus America issue, in which also there are people who support death to Israel, and they don't particularly care for people who aren't Jewish. So they're trying to say this is a niche issue, and the Democrats are appealing to these two groups. But even that kind of an identity-based issue, it's not. And it's a deep and profound ideological issue. It's the same issue taking a different face than the one we just talked about, or you just talked about with Cece, which is there used to be a sense, you bring up RFK Jr., that abortion, even if they wanted to legalize it, should be rare. Now they're worshiping it as a good thing. Well, they're worshiping the destruction of innocence in Israel as a good thing. They're bringing up, for example, Keith Ellison, who was going to be the head of the DNC until it was determined a few years back that he was too radical on these issues. He's a former, very public, vocal supporter of the Nation of Islam and Louis Farrakhan. They're bringing him up to be a speaker to appease that left-wing, crazy radicalism that they have given lead to in the party to become not just normalized and embraced, but celebrated. And it's taken over the party in every respect, from the death of innocent children in America to the death of innocent children in Israel.
And Jeff, that's something I wanted to tag on to, is that you mentioned both the abortion issue and the issue of Israel. And it's something you and I have had offline conversations about. It's something we've talked about here as well, is that when they say they're anti-Israel and against and they're anti-Semitic, or if they are celebrating abortion, it's a much deeper rot even than just racism or saying that they support a woman's right to choose. At the end of the day, it boils down to their hatred and disgust for the Judeo-Christian principles that our country was founded upon and the state of Israel was founded upon. And so when they, as you've brought up, if you think that their hatred of Israel will stop at Israel, it won't. It's why you see the great Satan is the United States when it's coming from Iran, but you're seeing that rot within the Democrat Party, and it's going to be on full display this week in Chicago.
100%, William. Look, in Israel, Israelis look at what's happening in America in some set of just disbelief, which is, first of all, because the media is so dominated by these messages, because the administration and the Democrat campaign is so dominated by these messages. Israel see themselves as being really sort of the border, standing at the border, manning the wall that's protecting Western civilization. Now, they're fighting a war to defend their own lives, but also they're fighting a war to, and by the way, and not just Jewish lives, 20% of Israelis are Arabs. Most of those Arabs are Muslims. Many are Christians. And they're also fighting in the army against this this just wave. I mean, they call themselves a flood on October 7th. This wave, this tsunami of death, of the love of death, and they say this about themselves: "We love death more than you love life," is what the enemies of Israel say, but also what the enemies of America say. Yes, this is one fight, and whether it's ACLJ Jerusalem or it's ACLJ in Washington or anywhere else around the globe, that's the fight that we're fighting. It's one fight everywhere on earth.
Well, speaking of fights, there is that conversation happening right now, whether that these protests that are taking place right now, probably in the protest zones, or maybe they're going to be springing back up at universities, if they make their way to the floor of the DNC, as we've seen this split. Do you foresee that happening? Do you see people taking a stance so radically that they're willing to use their point of power to make a statement here?
Yeah, there's two concepts that come into play that are spoken of often in politics. One is the Overton window, which is sort of along the spectrum of ideas. Some are considered too crazy, some are considered normal. Well, that window moves, what you can talk about and not talk about. And that window has moved dramatically. They're talking about establishing a full-blown terror state that continues to pay for murdering Jews, and Biden's administration and the Harris administration is, by the way, even more supportive of Biden. That's what they're trying to force now on Israel. They use words like ceasefire and talk about hostages, but there's one goal: the enforcement, America creating a complete terror state in the biblical heartland of Judea and Samaria, in the, not just that, but the high ground that Israel needs to live, to survive. And that's now completely normalized. So they move beyond that. So as extreme as they'll go, you'll see protesters saying they want to be even more extreme. Positions that they couldn't take 4 years ago or 8 years ago about whether or not to divide Jerusalem or whether or not to move the embassy. Now it's talking about whether a Jewish state should be allowed to exist at all, whether Jews should be expelled or murdered, which is really the only alternatives that they're talking about. And that's become normalized. And the people they have speaking believe in that. And the people protesting, they want a complete Jewish genocide. That's what they want. That's when they say, and there are all these interviews, street interviews, they're very happy with that idea. They think the Jews, they're not Israel. They don't hate Israel because of policy or because of what Israel has done. They hate Israel because it is an avatar for Jews, and they just want Jews gone because Jews represent the beginning and continuum of the Judeo-Christian civilization that they want to destroy.
And Jeff, just to bring it back to that New York Times piece once again, is that the things that the media allows the Democrat Party to get away with are because of that double standard within U.S. media and really global media, especially if you look at an organization like Reuters that is horribly anti-Semitic and has been for generations. But it, when you look at this article and they try to be like, look, it's unity around in the party, even though they have a policy difference. They're trying to make this a policy difference when you're talking about genocide and anti-Semitism. Right. But the fact that they are platforming, as you mentioned, Keith Ellison, if someone spoke at the RNC who had espoused white supremacist language publicly and used that to further their career, it would be nonstop, wall-to-wall headline about how they are embracing on their biggest stage a white nationalist, a white supremacist. They have to make up headlines and try to co-opt that because that's what they want to write, but they can't because that's not who was speaking at the RNC. They have a real anti-Semite, someone who sides with the cause of genocide and the destruction of Israel speaking, and they're trying to say, look, they can have policy disagreements and still be unified. Just, I think people need to let that sink in.
Right, exactly. So the bloodless, you know, the famous phrase, the banality of evil. And as we want to see the movie version or the poetic version of evil where someone who looks satanic, but that's not the way it works. They look like bureaucrats and they speak nice flowery language about wanting peace and ceasefire and return of the hostages, but that's not what they actually mean. And if you look at their platform, even not even the most recent one, but it's just getting worse. They've said they want to criminalize literally the existence of Jews. Just a Jew living in Jerusalem should be a crime. The Biden administration is already sanctioning Jews for living in areas. There's no other faith, there's no other ethnicity, nation in the world that this would be allowed in by the Democrats. But when it comes to Jews, there are places in the world where they want to sanction you criminally for living there. And those places have to be called Judea and Jerusalem. So yes, what passed for normal, and by the way, they have these groups they call pro-Israel groups. Every one of the groups the New York Times mentions is a profoundly anti-Israel group. Their policies are anti-Israel directly. They are as they're groups of Democrat operatives that are being paid to pretend they're pro-Israel. That's what this is. There is nothing pro-Israel on the agenda. It is all 100% anti-Israel. The question is how fiercely they want to say it, how openly they want to say it.
Yep, and how we're going to respond to it. And that's why the work of the ACLJ continues. Thank you, Jeff, for joining us. That's the reason we have an ACLJ Jerusalem, to make sure your voice gets heard around the world as well, not just here in America, that when there are what will be a wall-to-wall coverage, and whether this is the top topic that ends up splitting the party or not, it doesn't matter because we really know what the truth is. You can be involved in that conversation at ACLJ.org. Do it right now. Phone lines are open also. We have three lines open. We would love to have you on the air today. Give us a call. 1-800-684-3110. Whether that's talking about the inflation situation with the price gouging and how they're going to fix the prices, whether that's talking about life or whether that is talking about Israel, we're open to those conversations or anything related to that world, of course, with the Democrat National Convention starting this week, starting tonight. What's that going to look like? Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. I encourage you also to keep supporting the work of the ACLJ. When you do, you fund things like ACLJ Jerusalem. We have to be there. We have to be there so we can be a voice for you. We'll be right back taking your phone calls, the most important people in the room, coming up next. All right, it's time to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's right, 1-800-684-3110 to be on the air. Look, I usually say to send in the clowns. That's, you know, one of our things. And if you want to send in a clown, God bless you. I see some clowns going in. But today, since Harry Hutchinson mentioned zoo animals, I have seen so many animal emojis that I'm going to just put in there. If you were forced to eat a zoo animal, what would it be? Put in the emoji of your favorite zoo animal, or it could be any animal. You know, we've had a debate. Is a pig a zoo animal? I don't know. A zebra? Probably. I think that would probably lend itself more. But you know what? Just put in your favorite animal. Man, you guys in the comments, I have to say, if you're brand new to the YouTube channel, subscribe, because this is the fun you get to have each and every day. The content we put up, you're going to learn a lot. And then you're going to be entertained. And hopefully we provide that here on Seculo. I see a lot of the clowns coming in. Phone lines are jammed right now. Let's go ahead and take them from. Let's go with people who are on hold the longest. William right now is in New York. I did want to say this real quick, just as a little incentive. If you're an ACLJ supporter, make sure you always tell the phone screener if you're an ACLJ champion. That's someone that gives on a monthly recurring basis, because you get priority in terms of getting your phone call taken. So, William, you're on the air.
Hello, basically I've been thinking about just how ridiculous the regulations are. Bringing down the cost of living would seem to be the wisest approach, and there are a lot of cheaper alternatives, but the Democrats just want to regulate the heck out of everything.
That's right. And as William's referencing that, a lot of the regulations that go into building has also driven up the price of housing, as well as the material cost. I mean, you saw how much lumber skyrocketed, especially after the pandemic when Kamala Harris and Joe Biden were in office. But now, as they're trying to say that they are going to lower housing cost and try to bring down that number, she's also introducing plans like specific $25,000 credits and tax credits that would go for these new home buyers, which whenever you start having these mandated government things, what it ends up doing is raising the price by $25,000. So you're in effect hurting the economy, hurting the price of housing, which is out of control.
Yeah.
It is absolutely ridiculous how much it costs to live in the United States at this point, but they're going to harm it more than help it if they're able to get these policies through.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for calling in. I'm going to say two things. One, I love all the animals that are coming in.
I know you threw my train of thought off there.
I apologize to some. We lost about 500 viewers when I said that.
Oh,
I think
no.
I disgusted about 500 people when I said this. But I do also love that our moderators got involved. The official ACLJ is putting a stand on what they would like to eat, which I think is a bit it's a bit too much. A lot of people are saying elephant because, you know, it could.
First of all, our moderators put a cow, which is that, once again, that's a farm animal, not a zoo animal. I think there's a
I don't see a cow. A cow first.
Yeah, cow first.
And then a cookie at the end, it looks like. All right, let's continue on. Back to maybe a little more serious business. Cherie is calling in California. Cherie, thanks for listening. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I would like to say that, you know, Kamala Harris, to me, is doing the best that she can with the hand that she's been dealt with. I'm a Kamala Harris person. I'm going to vote for her. I'm not voting for Donald Trump. I don't know about the lies and the disrespect, and I don't think a president should act the way that he acts. And about the Israel thing, I'm free Palestine. I'm totally against all the bombing that's going on in Israel because they're killing innocent people, including children.
Shuri, look, I mean, no one wants to see innocent people die. That's, we should take that off the table. But I do want to say something. Thank you for listening and staying on hold for a half an hour. You have just been educated and informed on issues that you may not agree with. It sounds like you don't agree with anything that we stand for here. And you know what? I am not being pejorative. I'm being serious. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of this conversation.
And for being polite on the phone.
And for being polite. I'd love to see more comments like that where people say, you know, I don't agree with these guys, but I at least have my thoughts. Look, Kamala Harris has been put in a very interesting situation. There's a reason she's avoiding press conferences. There's a reason she's avoiding any kind of interviews or statements, really, in a broad scream. It's because she's been thrown into a loop, into a weird spot where they aren't sure how to handle it. And you know what? If you want to say she's done the best she could do, that may be very true. And if that's your point of view, that's totally fine with me.
And what I would push back with on that is that the best that she can do with the hand that's been dealt her is an admission that Bidenomics has not been great, but doubling down with price fixing and price controls from the government historically is a disaster.
Yeah.
So that is not the way to move forward. The most liberal papers in the country, Washington Post, CNN, are all saying that. So
I did see who someone's put the Washington Post, which obviously is owned by
Bezos,
who also, I believe, owns Whole Foods or one of those.
Yeah.
It's like, well, yeah, no wonder he doesn't want he doesn't want you to cap food. The man owns grocery stores.
And the most expensive
grocery stores. They're like, no, we can't be doing this. Who are we going to get our wasabi peas? Let's go continue on. Lynn's calling from Nevada. Online 2, you're on the air.
Oh, yeah, hi. I wanted to talk about President Trump's character. He was a man who built in construction for a lot of his career. He was around and on the site around a lot of rough people in construction. So when you see him getting scrappy, when he's getting a little loose around the collar and it seems like the tie's coming off, don't fret, don't worry about it. That's the normal man on the scene in him. Now then, think about the results that he brings back to those people, those rough working people, those construction workers. He brings a result that is positive. He brings a result that is gaining in your family, in your family's life, and in your future.
Hey, Lynn, I don't mean to cut you off. We're just running out of time. I want to make sure we get to other calls. I appreciate your comment and calling in. I think a lot of people feel that way. They've learned to accept this is how President Trump speaks and acts, and you just got to deal with it. I have learned that I don't like it, but unfortunately, I'm not going to change his mind.
But also why a lot of people did latch on to him in the first administration was because it felt real and because he brought dignity back to blue-collar workers in a way that the Democrat Party and the Democrat elite have taken away from them.
All right, Daryl's calling. Real quick, Daryl, we're running out of time in Texas. You're on the air. Daryl, you there? Unfortunately, we have no Daryl, which means we are out of phone calls for the day. Thank you for all that called in. I want to take this minute and a half before we wrap up to tell you this is a moment. Put the farm animals aside. Put all the silliness aside that we've been talking about. Not the farm animals, zoo animals. We got incredibly important work happening here at the ACLJ. I know we can have some fun on this broadcast, and part of what we do here is that. But this work, in terms of what we're doing to push back against the pro-abortion juggernaut that still exists out there, that is bringing abortions in a truck, you know, essentially in an RV, straight to the door of the Democratic convention saying, sign up, get your wait list. We're fighting against an unprecedented evil here, everybody. I mean, it's just true. These aren't people who are supporting a woman's right to choose or want to encourage all options. These are people celebrating the taking of a human life, and we're going to stand up against it. And that happens in a couple different ways, all in general. We're fighting for life in all 50 states all the time. So support the work of the ACLJ by going to aclj.org. We have this specific campaign in Massachusetts, and I don't want you to think because it's Massachusetts, it doesn't affect you. Because they have already said they're coming for your states. That this is just state one to try to shut down pro-life, pregnancy resource centers. These are centers that provide milk, that provide formula, that provide clothing, diapers, all of these essential needs to mothers who need it. And even care for fathers who need it. And they're trying to shut them down because it doesn't go with their point of view. Because they may use a word like hope. They may tell people even about Jesus. Who knows? We encourage you right now. Your donations are doubled through the rest of the month. Stop this mass deception. Go to aclj.org right now.